Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to An Hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and today, well, for so many of you, you're getting ready to have a fabulous weekend. It's summertime, and we're going to be talking about a police officer that was with the city of New York. And what's interesting about this story is that this police officer had written this story, but he did not publish it. His son did. We're going to be talking with Barry Weiner. His dad, Norman Weiner, had written this story, and we're going to find out a little bit about what's behind it. I want to welcome you, Barry, to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. Barry, you have the City of New York logo on the front of your cover with CYA. And when I saw this book, and I knew it was a fictitious story, normally I don't go in for fiction, but your dad wrote this story, and it was based on fact. Give us a little bit of history about your dad.
Well, my dad retired in 1981. He was a deputy inspector from New York City Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
And things happened in 1973. The main reason why he wrote the book, he wanted to show how people did not know how to cover themselves, got in trouble, and the ones that did stayed out of trouble. And around 1970, 1972, I don't know if you remember, a movie came out called The Super Cops, and they had nicknamed Batman and Robin.
Oh, Batman and Robin, okay.
Okay, they wrote the book, and they got famous by turning their friends in who sold drugs, and they used people's real names, and they made up stories. My father found out, and his parents found out, that they made everything up and made them look bad, so they sued them. And all the money from the book and the movie were held up in court for years. Then my father was thinking he could write a book and change people's names and tell, what really happened.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
Now, did your dad pass away?
No, my dad has Alzheimer's, and he's living in the assisted living facility in Sugarland.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think he would be very pleased to know that you had taken his story that he had put a lot of effort into, and this story is based on fact, that he had taken and written this story, given it to you, and then you decided you were going to move forward with it. Now, because it is, based on fact, wrapped in a fictitious format, what was your dad's biggest challenge when he was writing this story for him to be able to do what he did?
He went to show, one time in the police department, his men were falsely accused of stealing equipment from a utility truck. And the position of the police department at that time, it still is, because I talked to them, whatever commanding officer men get in trouble, they get charges automatically and they get transferred. So they're guilty until proven innocent, and the common criminal is innocent until proven guilty. There's something wrong there. So my father, got charges and they got transferred. And then 2 weeks, and all this was blown up in the paper. Captain Wiener's men did this, and every front page paper in New York City. And about a week later, they found out the man made it up, and there was a retraction that was very small.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not unusual. It's a challenge, I think, in today's world, and maybe it's always been there, to really have a good investigative journalist to get the facts and to get the information. So when they finally found out, to have the retraction and to not make it more visible, just to have a little tiny segment, that is not unusual in the area of journalism. Now, the character, Captain David Singer.
That's my father.
That's your dad?
That's my dad.
Now, for those of you that like detective stories, I think that this is something that you would really enjoy reading, because this is about an elite police unit, and it goes into details about the various things they have to deal with on a daily basis, giving you sort of behind the scenes information. And there's a little bit of a mystery to it. Now, I noticed with this book that there was not really a total, complete ending to this story.
The reason I did that, I tried to get it published, and the literary agent told me it was too big, so I decided to break it into two parts.
Uh-huh. So there's going to be a second one after this one.
Hopefully there will be, yes.
Wow. Now, let me mention a little bit more about your dad, because Norman Weiner was he had a Master of Public Administration degree.
Yes.
He served as an officer for more than 32 years, and like you mentioned, he became a deputy inspector. And he ran the 83rd Precinct, taught safety education at the police headquarters, and interestingly enough, oversaw the funeral of Robert Kennedy and was the head of the operations for the Manhattan South Task Force. He really had quite a bit in the way of responsibility.
He did, and now reading, and I had to read the book in detail, and when I tapped into a Word document, I found out what kind of phenomenal leader he was. I'll give you an example. He always had an open door policy, and most, like, someone gets in trouble, or they do something bad. What happens? The manager takes them inside the door and yells at them and says, "If you don't do better, I'm going to get rid of you." Right?
Mm-hmm.
My father had this cop who was always having problems. He wasn't doing his job properly. He took him in his office. And he told him exactly what he was doing wrong. And then instead of saying, "I'm going to get rid of you," he said, "I have faith that you're going to be doing better. I know you could do better and you're going to do a good job." He told him what he was doing wrong, and he brought him back up.
So he was a man.
How many leaders would do that for somebody?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's what makes a leader, because no one is going to go through life without making mistakes. And I don't
right.
know of anybody anywhere, regardless of their positioning, that is not going to have some kind of a learning curve. And, of course, with the police departments, as well as so many other government positionings, it is not unknown, the corruption. In fact, there have been a number of movies that have been made on various points in history about corruption in police departments and in government offices. It just seems like it never ends. And that's something that your dad even had to fight.
Right. I mean,
and that's something... Go ahead.
Throughout the whole book, he was worried about the IAD, the Internal Investigating Department.
Mm-hmm.
Something was going to... Because that incident at the 83rd Precinct, he constantly was worried that something he did or didn't do properly, they were going to go after him again. So the police department made him paranoid.
Well, I think that internal investigation factor is necessary, though. And I can understand why your dad would get very anxious, because this is something that is sort of like a check system to try to keep things in order. But he brings out so much with his stories. And when he talks about his driver, Artie, who is a very interesting individual, because he is a police officer, and as the man in positioning, as he was, as deputy inspector, he had a driver. Is this still common? That sort of surprised me.
No, he had the driver. This was when he was a captain.
Oh, when he was a captain.
Yes.
Okay.
Also, talking about his leadership ability, they had a demonstration. I'll give you two examples of what kind of leader he was. They had a demonstration of the hard hats, okay, and he had his men lined up, and this big guy, must have been like 6'4", 300 pounds, came out and took a police baton and was swinging it like a weapon. My father confronted him. He timed it, and he got him in the headlock and got him on the floor, but it's kind of funny, too. At the same time he was trying to choke the guy out, he was worried that he was trying to fail around for his toupee, so his toupee came off. He lost his grip, and the guy went back into the crowd again. And there was another time when he was handling a demonstration with the hardest on the bridge, and the leader came up to my father and said he was going to knock him down. My father told me he was going to knock him down, he was going to lock him up and press charges against him. The guy turned around and walked away. I remember this story because one time I was taking a marine biology class in Virgin Islands, and if I don't want to do something with a group of people, I won't do it. And the people in the class knew I knew martial arts, and they wanted me to drink with them. And I didn't want to drink with them. And they said, well, you can't take us all on. I told the guy, you're right, I can't take you on, but I could put you in the hospital. He turned around, left, and walked away, and that was it. I didn't have to use any violence. I used words, and that was the end. I defused the situation.
So you learned from your dad. You learned from your father.
Right.
And it's an interesting situation with bullying, and that's pretty much what you're describing. It's an adult version, but it's pretty much the same thing. Now let's talk about some of the characters in the book. You've got a character, Anthony Takano, and I believe he had a nickname named Kogo.
Right. This is a really strange character. He's a Italian cop, well-built, worked out. He shaved his head and liked to suck on a lollipop because he loved Kojak from the TV series from the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But he had a strange characteristic. He had an effeminate voice. Right? So anytime that he met arrested, someone made fun of him, he would beat him up, and he had the highest civilian complaint against him in the whole department. And the reason they called him Takano, because he was cheap. And he didn't realize that meant cheap. He thought that meant macho. So that was, he never knew what it really meant.
Interesting. Now, this particular personality was, again, all of these personalities that are discussed in this book
are
based on real people. Just
right.
The scenery maybe has changed a little bit, and, of course, their name is not being used. Now, I remember when I talked to you about setting up an interview that you said that you had been a little bit apprehensive about showing this book to people that were on the New York police force. But it's not proven to be a negative for you at all, has it?
No, but last year in September, I went to talk to the 300 New York police captain. It was a captain of the Benevolent Endowment Association. And besides being a nurse, I teach. And I never talk in front of 300 people. But most of the time when I'm teaching, the people are listening to me because they're being tested on the material. This time I went, and I was the first speaker, and they were eating and stuff, and out of 300 people, only 25 were listening to me. So that threw me a little bit, but they liked what I had to say. So I actually did it. So I think after doing that, I could do anything.
In this book, you have a number of different situations that come up, from fire rescues to murders that he had to deal with. But there's a time frame with the chapters. There is basically a description of what someone can go through in a day or within a week. And you mentioned the Manhattan South Special Operations Unit.
Mm-hmm.
And I found this fascinating because it was set up to deal with strikes, demonstrations, small parades, and special operational conditions without having to resort to transferring personnel under command from one precinct to another. Is that still an operation?
That's still there.
That's quite interesting. And he goes through the story about, entering a burning building. And something that I found fascinating, that when there's a fire, and this was something he covered very, very carefully. And I know here in the Seattle area, we've had some huge, huge building fires. And, of course, the fire department, the personnel is very, very well trained. But there is this story in the book about fixed points of reference when you're in a burning building that he went through in this book. Did he have to deal with fires very often?
And he was a lieutenant. He was a safety officer, and he came up with different safety bulletins and stuff. And one of them was probably dealing with a fire, and he used it when he would talk to his men, and he gave it to his sergeants, and they showed him what to do and what not to do. But in general, he told them to stay out of it and let the firemen take care of it.
I found the points that he made quite interesting because they're safety points that actually anybody could use, that if you're going to go into a burning building, be sure you tell someone you're going in so that they'll know that you're going into the building. Fix points of references in your mind. And if you're in a high rise, don't ever enter an elevator. That was really interesting information to me. And also that if someone is in a fire, that there is a supply of oxygen between your body and your shirt. And in this case, he's talking about uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
But you can open up your shirt and breathe into it, but it may not have a whole bunch of oxygen there, but it's enough that could get you out of a burning building and then get to windows. I mean, he's so explicit in his information. I think that there's so much here that he gives. It would really make a very good movie.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I have a friend on Facebook who's a part-time screenwriter, and we're working on that right now.
Well, I think it really would make a very, very good movie. Now, documentation in the police department, that is the name of the game. When I worked at a police department in Inglewood, California many years ago, that was the name of the game then, and it's become even more so in our world of technological advances that we have today. There are so many things that just are available to do this with, but he explicitly explains how in the police department that is so important, and that all radio messages are taped and stored for a couple of months in case anything should come up.
He helped me. I told you I was a nurse when I first starting out. Something happened, and I was going to get in trouble. Something, like one time, the staff didn't like my manager, so she tried to get me in trouble. I didn't know how to write this up. They don't teach you how to do that in school. I went into my father's situation, and he told me how to write up in the police department who, what, when, and where. I did exactly what he told me to, and I didn't get in any trouble. And from that day on, I know how to handle stuff like that and how to write up something that happens.
Well, it is a wonderful, wonderful discipline. He also goes into dealing with the mentally disturbed. And I know local police officers in my neck of the woods, we have a mental hospital that's in our area. And that's something that they have to deal with on a daily basis. Sometimes mental patients will get out and they're out roaming around, and people at the grocery stores will recognize them and call the police and say, okay, Bon Bon Mary is here and got to come and pick her up. He goes into that, and I found that this was a very compassionate chapter, yet it was interesting for him to make the comment that society no longer considers mentally ill people as being incurable. So an officer has to know how to safely escort a violent or an irrational person to a hospital to be treated. And he goes through the different steps, and I thought, this is amazing. This man is really giving out such wonderful information. It would be great if we had something like this that could be passed along even to young people.
Yeah, what? Yeah. I remember in the book that there was a huge guy that one of the cops had to transfer to, like what you said, to a hospital. When what they actually did, they were playing cards, and he didn't act violent. They just had a regular interaction. And just for your listeners, if you're interested in getting a book, my website is www.cyabook.com.
Well, now with this book, and with you've got in here, there's stories about infidelities between male and female police officers,
right.
Stun guns. I mean, we don't hear about that very much, but they are part of police work. Goes into corruption.
The second part of his book, there was an incident where some police officers used a stun gun to get a confession out of somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a big incident that happened back then. So, I mean, it was happening then, too.
Mm-hmm. Competition in the police department. He talks about competition.
Oh, yes, very fair. Okay, my father was a lieutenant. There's a guy who was his boss. They always had problems. It stemmed from they were lieutenants in the police academy, the police headquarters. They were rivals on a job competing who could do better, and they played handball and paddleball. My father always beat him. My father was better than him on a job, and then he became my father's boss, and he really gave my father a hard time. And he was like the departmental steamroller. He enjoyed getting people in trouble. So I used him to, like, the father called him the hatchet man. In the book, they call him the steamroller. This guy would take, my father would do his work, and he'd take credit for the work my father did for him. So that was his.
Now, you have a number of photographs about your dad,
mm-hmm.
and it's sort of sad to hear that he has Alzheimer's today, but I'm so glad that he did write this before he reached this condition where he, you know, you wouldn't be able to talk to him about it.
I mean, right now he could talk to him. He reads the book, but he doesn't remember any of the stories, which is sad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. His long-term memory is being affected.
Well, now, short and long-term.
One of the things, having been in New York, and I see a lot of these couriers on bikes, I was really fascinated with the fact that he brings out the information about these couriers that are on bicycles, because New York City is so heavy with traffic, and to get something from one point to another, it's just incredible, and these bikers just are amazing. They're just fast as they can be. However, there are a lot of accidents with these bicycle riders, and he brings that out in his book.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Internal Affairs Division talks about the corruption and things that the Internal Affairs Division is always looking out for, and they have to check on everything that is reported. But this is a comment that he makes that I think applies in just about any venue, and that is, if you want an effective organization, the people in it must feel they have the support of their superiors. Not a blind support, but a reasonable backing when they perform their duty in a legitimate manner. And as an officer and as a captain, as he's portraying himself in the book, he had a deep sense of responsibility and obligation towards the people that were under him.
And the people that were under him loved him. You know what the nickname for him was?
No.
Coach.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, He had open door, like I said, he had open door policy. He would peel his shirt off his back. If one of his men was being wronged, he would go out of his way and take care of it. But don't lie to him. If you ever lie to him, that was the end.
Mm-hmm. He talks about the wives of police officers, things
mm-hmm.
that go on there, what they have to go through. And, of course, he mentions your mother in his own way. When you got through this book, did it help you have a better understanding of your father?
I was very proud. I mean, when I was 17, when this was going on, you know, when you're younger, you're just thinking about yourself and about your own little world. I didn't realize what he was going through. I found out, you know, realized what kind of phenomenal legendary leader he was. I was very proud to have a father like that.
And what would you want to say to people today relative to those that would want a career as a police officer? It's very challenging. I mean, we've had here in the Seattle area, there have been a number of shootings. There have been officers that have been killed. And they're supposed to be the protectors of the public. And it is not, it's not a glamorous job. It's really hard work.
It's kind of funny. A while back, before I became a nurse, I was in the oil industry, and I kept getting laid off. And one time I was thinking about going to the police department, and my father talked me out of it. He said it was not like when he was in the police department. He's already retired. So he doesn't think it's a good career to go to anymore.
Well, things have definitely changed. The world has changed.
Right.
But your father has left a legacy for you, for your family, for your children and your children's children, about a time and a space. He really gives an inside look into a world that maybe, you know, people that have watched Tony Savalas, you know, on television, and so many other portrayals of police work through the years. He gives a better picture. And some of it's funny. A lot of it is rather scary when you think
right.
of it.
Yeah.
But they live in a world that is not a world of the average person. And your dad really felt like he was born to it. That's what he wanted to do. That was his passion. That was his whole career, his whole life. And a man that had a strong sense of pride in himself. And again, I think that you've done your father a great honor, and that it should be quite exciting for you when you come out with the second one to complement the first one. Because as I said at the beginning of the interview, when I finished it, I was left hanging. So that second one has got to come out.
All right. Well, I'm hoping when my friends finish the screenplay, we can get a studio to buy it. The movie will help drive sales for the book, and then I'll do the second part.
CYA, City of New York. If you like mystery, if you like stories that are based on fact, this is an interesting read, written by a former New York City police officer, Norman Weiner. And my guest today has been Barry Weiner, his son. And this book really gives you an inside look into a world, again, that most of us will never have a part of. But the truth is there. It's just in a garment of fiction. And strip a little bit of the fiction away, and you've got some fascinating material to read. Barry, I want to thank you for being my guest. Your website is CYA.com. So for those of you that might be interested...
CYABook.com, sorry.
CYABook.com, I beg your pardon. CYABook.com. And Barry, I want to thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome, and I wish you the best, and I wish the best for your dad.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break again, CYA with Barry Weiner. CYABook.com is his website. Check it out. Again, if you like a mystery, if you like police stories, you'll like this one. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Welcome, my lords and ladies, to the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, located at Marist Farms in Buckley, Washington. For 3 weekends in August, starting August 7th and 8th, we will transport you back to the days of old, where magic and merriment reign. Come see the multitude of musicians, dancers, jugglers, gypsies, peasants, nobles, pirates, and prestidigitation. That's magic in your compounds. Learn to swing a sword or shoot a bow and be knighted by Her Majesty the Queen. Hold your breath as jousters wheel their mounts around to engage in full contact combat on the field of battle. Sign on to sail the seas with Stern's Pirates, or sit down with friends and family for turkey legs and a fine brewed ale. Delights abound for the young and old at the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. So come one and all, starting August 7th and 8th, for fun and excitement, and may your day be fair. The tickets and info at www.washingtonfair.com.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. I do have to let you know that something has evolved with our phone lines. So if you wanted to call in and chat with me today, it's not going to be possible. So I'm going to be sharing information. Okay, excuse me. I misunderstood some information. You can call in 888-815-9756. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, I'll be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. 888-815-9756. Oh my goodness, there's just so much going on in the world, in life, and sometimes do you ever wonder how you're going to be able to deal with stress? Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Well, I feel meditation is a very good one. Listening to music is another one. But do you know what? There's a supplement that helps with anxiety. I was reading material on it this morning, And I got some other material, and I thought, okay, let me pass it along to you. The supplement that can help anxiety or stress is magnesium. Now, they found that there is a stress hormone associated with the fight or flight syndrome. Well, when people are deficient in magnesium, they find that they go through a lot of anxiety. Here we go, finding out more about how nutrients affect our well-being. Well, if you're going to take a multivitamin with at least 200 milligrams of it in it, that's great. But you also find magnesium in things like chocolate. Hey, hey, good excuse for a piece of chocolate. Remember, you want to go with a dark chocolate that's got the high amounts of cocoa in it because that's the best. And then also avocados. Oh, and this is the time of year for avocados. They're absolutely wonderful. I'm a California gal originally, and avocados were very often in our food regimen when I was growing up, and they are wonderful foods for you. And even though they are considered a fatty food, the type of fat that's in an avocado is marvelous. So consider magnesium. And remember something. If you're sitting in front of a computer for hours at a time, the magnesium in your body is literally leached out. We are beginning to understand that when we're around all of this electronic equipment, there's definite effects on our physiological system. Remember, these bodies of ours are like chemical factories. And as we get older, sometimes they don't run as well as they should, so you need supplementation. But I know that this is something that is very significant and very important, so I wanted to share that little bit of information with you. Also, keep calm with cherries. Again, this is the season. That's right. They have wonderful plant compounds in them that not only block inflammation and work with pain effectively, but researchers at the Michigan State University said it works well eating cherries if you've got a headache. They work well at releasing tension. And the tart cherries are one of the few natural food sources of melatonin. Mm-hmm. Isn't it amazing? One particular fruit having such an effect. Is that a good reason for cherry pie? Hey, maybe. With or without the sugar, cherries are a very, very good food. And I know here in the Pacific Northwest, oh, we have the Queen Anne cherries. They're those golden cherries that have a touch of blush on them. They are so sweet and delicious. And, of course, the bean cherries. Those are awesome. Absolutely awesome. Oh, now, by the way, for those of you in the state of Washington, hey, if you want to call me, you can get through 888-815-9756. Now, coming up in just a couple of weeks will be the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. And I know that you're hearing the ad during the show. This is an incredible event. I'm going into my 10th year with them. It's being held at the Maris Farms in Buckley, Washington, the first 3 weekends in August, and I have passes still available. So this is in advance of it even opening its doors, and you have a chance. If you're in the state of Washington and you would like to get a free family pass, 2 adults, 2 kids, give me a call at my office because I need to get this in the mail to you. Give me a call at my office at 800-872-8852 or send me an email, send me an email at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's Donna at Delphi, D-E-L-P-H-I, international.com. And be sure to put in the subject line, free ticket to Ren Faire. And I will get this out to you right away. I will need your contact information, including your phone number, so I can verify that. But again, I've got some tickets left. Let's go for it. If you're in the state of Washington, this is a marvelous event. It's just so much fun. Costumes, and I'll have a booth there. Look for the booth that has the golden banners with the giant red lions, and that's where I'm going to be. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. That's 888-815-9756. Now I've got a story for you today about phantoms. Don't you love spooky stories? I do. I think they're just awesome. Well, there is one, and it goes back in history a little bit. In fact, it's July the 14th of 1692, so let your imagination sort of float back in time a little bit. There was a military garrison in Massachusetts, and it was surrounded by 12 strangers. Now, these strangers made horrible sounds, according to the documentation. Apparently, those that were inside the garrison thought that, you know, these had to be some kind of devil people outside of this particular garrison. Well, there was a man on duty in the garrison. His name was Ebenezer Babson. Doesn't that fit with the 1600s? He and some comrades that he gathered together decided they were going to find out who these devil people were. And they came out of the building in the garrison, guns blazing. They were going to defend their families. Now, three of the strangers were shot, fell into the marsh grass. But something happened that nobody expected. Those three that were shot, that hit the ground, that should have been dead, well, they got up. They weren't injured, and they ran away. The others that were seen were shot. And when the men from inside the garrison rushed to where the bodies had dropped, found the bodies disappeared. Does that make the hair on the back of your neck stand up a little bit? Can you imagine what they were feeling? Well, these individuals, they were always outside the garrison. They could run through mud. They never left a track. Now, one of the invaders removed a silver gun from his shoulder strap and fired on Ebenezer. The bullet, when it was later retrieved from a tree, was thinly pointed, and unlike any of the ammunition any of the men inside the garrison had ever seen. Now, these individuals that were outside the garrison that were causing problems frequently usually were seen in groups of two or three. And they spoke some kind of a language. Nobody could understand what it was. Now, Ebenezer Babson, one day was returning from a day's hunting, saw two strangers emerging from his house and then running into a cornfield that was adjacent to it. His family told him that nobody had been in the house. His family was in the house, and they didn't see anybody. He went back outside and found that he could see two men hiding behind a log. They jumped up and disappeared into a swamp that was nearby. He noticed that they were dressed in tight-fitting pants and shirts, and one was wearing an unusual headdress. Now, this concerned him because he thought Indians were going to come and invade the garrison, and so he made sure that his family got out of the cabin into the garrison for safety. Now, what's interesting is that after this particular attack on the garrison that happened, the sightings of these 12 men dropped off. And a final report came from a single man who was waiting in ambush for the visitors when his gun misfired. The visitors looked at this man whose gun had misfired. They sort of looked disgusted. And then they never came back. Who were they? To this day, nobody knows who the phantoms were and why they were in that place. Sort of a eerie story, don't you think? Sometimes truth is really, really fascinating stuff. Absolutely fascinating stuff. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. I was talking just a moment ago about using magnesium. And whenever you can use food as a healthy part of your diet, and so many times we get so busy we just don't have time to give a lot of attention to what we're putting into our bodies. But it really doesn't take a lot to stay well. Remember, you eat plenty of vegetables, have good meat, if you're a meat eater. If you're a vegan, you've got to make sure that you have those foods that are going to give your body the nutrients that it needs. And to, you know, just being healthy really is something that you have to give yourself attention for. I mean, two and four. You've got to be sure that you take care of yourself. Well, there's things like ginger. Now, you can make a ginger tea, use fresh ginger. Well, in Jamaica, ginger is something that's used a great deal in food. In fact, it's said the way we use salt is the way people use ginger in Jamaica. They wash down meals with ginger beer, and that's a non-alcoholic brew similar to ginger ale, but it has a tangier taste. And then, of course, ginger has just so many positive aspects to it, but it does have its own particular flavor. So they use it, and of course we know the Asian people have used it for centuries. One of my favorite foods, and this came to my space of experience because of traveling and broadcasting in Hawaii for a number of years, and I really hadn't had very much interaction with the papaya, the fruit. Even though I grew up in California, it was just, we had so much fruit, so many different varieties of fruit. But papaya wasn't something that I'd known too much about. It is one of the best things for you, and it's loaded with enzymes. And, in fact, if you have a digestive discomfort, just go to your health food store and get some papaya enzymes. Have them after you eat, and you won't have stomach problems. It's just amazing. But it's got papain in it, and it breaks down protein in the digestive tract. So papayas are absolutely wonderful. And, yes, you can find them in your supermarkets, but you do have to let them ripen. And I know up here in the Pacific Northwest, lots of times when we have certain foods, they're not going to ripen as well or as quickly as they do in warmer climates, you know, like in the north, the Southwest, or in California, or, you know, in Nevada, you know, all these areas where you have very, very warm temperatures. It's really a wonderful, wonderful fruit to introduce into your diet. And also, coconuts. Ah, yes. But do you know what? They have found that coconut oil is one of the healthiest oils that you can use, sort of like olive oil. The body works with it very well. And Johnny Bowden, an author of The Most Effective Natural Cures on Earth, he said coconuts are loaded with fatty acids, but the fatty acids actually reduce body fat by reviving your metabolism, assisting in digestion, and regulating the thyroid. Now, why is this the case? Well, they're packed with lauric acid, and it just balances out blood sugar levels. It's good for you. It's really, really good for you. And coconut oil, my goodness, for how many generations have the Hawaiians used it for their skin and for their hair? So have a spoonful of coconut oil. You can use it for cooking. You can buy it at a health food store. No preservatives in it. It's great stuff, and I think you'll really like it. Let's take a break for a moment. When we come back, I have some stories to tell you. In fact, one about how you can make your dreams come true. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. Four out of the last eight Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.DelphiInternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. I don't know about you, but during the summer, I really like to have something to munch on, little snacky items, because it gets warm and you don't want to have a bunch of heavy food. Well, I've got a couple of snacks that if I have the time, I'll share with you that are really quick and easy to fix and flavorful. One is a honey nut cheese with fruit, so get your pad of paper handy and a pen. I wanted to share this story about a wonderful young woman. She's in her late teens, 18 years of age, and she's like so many other young people at that age. She has to go out on her own, and that might not be such a big deal. But you know what? Brittany had been in foster care, and she was scared to death. Now, at the age of 12, she had been removed from her family because her parents, well, they were very troubled people, and it was a very ugly environment. She was removed, and she ended up going into a foster care situation. It was a tough time for her. When you're 12 years old, you're just beginning to come into puberty. Your life has gone through very difficult times like Brittany's had, and then she's growing up into her teenage years, and the foster mother that she got, the first one, was just a dear. She loved her tremendously, but the woman became ill, so she couldn't continue to take care of her. Well, she ended up being put into another foster home, and she said the family was very nice. But there came that day when she could no longer be in the foster care system. And she, at the age of 18, was put into her own apartment. However, nobody had prepared Brittany for being a young adult. Now, she had occasionally worked in a bakery, and she said, I have to go to school. I have excellent grades, and she said she found out that her state, which was Rhode Island, had a project that supported young people like her with help with tuition, and she said, it really was tough working and going to school. And, of course, she had all the financial responsibilities any of us would have, your rent, your utilities, transportation. Well, one day, her caseworker, yes, she still had a caseworker until she was 21 years of age. Her caseworker was just listening, and Brittany was having a real, real tough time. And she said, Brittany, I want you to think about joining a group called Aspire, A-S-P-I-R-E. She said, I realize you have not been given the skills to understand how to live in the adult world. This is a group of teens, mature teens, just like yourself, that can learn. Why don't you take the class? So she did. They taught her money management, how to cook, taught her about nutrition, time and stress management. And she goes, this is awesome. So she learned how to live on a budget, and she was taught to live within her means. Now, this is what came out of it. Now, she was 18 years old. They encouraged her to save all the money she possibly could. And they said if she saved $1,000, they had a program that would match it every year until she was 24. Then, in talking with one of the teachers, she said that she had expressed to this teacher she wanted to have a career in a medical field, and he was able to arrange for an internship at a hospital for her. Well, guess what? A year went by. She's 19 now. She was $2,000 richer. She'd saved all of her money, and it had been matched, and that money was in her bank account. She kept up with her classes in this Aspire group, and in 2008, she reached another goal. She graduated from college. Now, today, she is 23. She's the office manager for a dental group, and she's going to be going on to school. And guess what she did at the age of 23? Because of the prudent skills that she developed, she bought a house. She now is involved in doing assistance for young teenagers who, like her, are trying to make their way in the world. Brittany says she likes people to know that you should never give up on yourself. You can make your dreams come true. She said, I know how important it is to have someone who believes in you, someone that's encouraging you in your corner of the world, and to be able to give that gift to someone, as I've been given it, is absolutely wonderful. So for those of you that would like to be a mentor to someone else, there's a group called volunteermatch.org, volunteermatch.org, and there's other groups that you can check out within your community or environment, Big Brothers, Big Sisters. There's so many groups where young people can have mentors, and they do need to know how to work and how to survive in an adult world. When they don't know how to do it, then they're going to feel like they just don't have a hope or a prayer of achieving what is important to them, and they'll give up on their dreams. And we as adults need to remember that's something that's our job to teach them. So if you ever want to do that, look at those groups in your own community and become a part of that. One day, a young person like Brittany may be able to pass that same wisdom along to another younger person. This is Donna Sebo. Have an absolutely fabulous, awesome weekend. We'll be back here on Monday talking with Ed Poole, Lessons from the Porch. And we've got a great lineup of guests. Check it out on bbsradio.com. See who's coming up, and I'll be with you right here, same time, same place. This is Donna Sebo. Bye for now.
You have been listening to the Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to the Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.